Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by Jacob Kanzler, Mike Malott, and Jack Spencer. A little later, we're going to have some audio files from the Friday session in which the House and the Senate both approved Senate Bill 1, the substituted version that represents the new auto insurance reform law. I don't know, guys, can we call it no fault? We can't really call this no fault anymore, can we?
Probably not, other than the fact that it carries over. Once you have a title, you kind of have a way of sticking to it as an identifier. But other than that, it's not very descriptive anymore.
Because you can now sue somebody under this particular law once damages get beyond a certain point. If you're at fault, you could be in a situation where you're paying something. Maybe we're mini-tort now. Are we mini-tort now?
Mini-tort's not bad. Representative Gay Dagnogo called it a hybrid system or a bifurcated system.
Bifurcated. It's got such a negative connotation to it.
Well, it does, actually.
She was pretty much on fire today. Who comes out a winner on this? The Republicans, Whitmer, everybody, get some thoughts here on that.
I think in the end, Whitmer and the Republicans do come out winners. It shows in the number of Democrats who, at the end of the day, had to vote for lower rates. I mean, there's no doubt that rates will go down. Whether they'll go down as much as has been said is, I think, the question.
Insurance companies don't like this still, Jack.
I don't know if they hate it, but I don't think they like it as much as they like the, we can now say, old system. But they have been preaching for a long time this kind of thing has to happen. In order for there to be competition and other things, that always remember that did not necessarily mean that it was a money issue for them if this took place. And I think that they know there's going to be some more competition, and they know there's going to be some other things involved here that will maybe make it a little less to their advantage.
All right, Jacob, here's what I want to ask you. Does this bill get signed on Friday if we didn't have the threat of the ballot proposal language from Dan Gilbert?
Oh, well, looking at everything that's taken place this week, you would think that that was a big factor into the speed. Certainly, I think the Mackinac Conference, of all things, kind of made this an artificial timeline. So now that's not hanging over people's heads. But certainly with the Republicans passing a bill in both chambers and being able to quickly pass it and send it to the governor, I think also had a big impact into bringing her to the table.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure that this gets signed on Friday if Dan Gilbert doesn't come in. These negotiations could have stretched on for a lot longer. In the end, though, I think we got to say the Democrats did all right under this bill. Would you guys agree?
I think the two main factors in this is, number one, I think so far what we have seen with our new governor, Gretchen Whitmer, is she is interested in governance. I don't think she's interested in making points and standing on the sidelines and having a lot of rhetorical stuff. I think when push gets down to shove, she's interested in actually accomplishing things. The reason I would reject the idea that, I'm not saying the Gilbert thing had nothing to do with it, but she certainly could have dug in her heels and said, I'm going to make them prove to me they're really going to do that. I'm going to make them actually start collecting signatures. And I think this is going to be a big win for her in the long run. I think you start out your term with this thing going down and a big fight and everything, I think that would have looked very much the opposite. I think she comes out ahead. I also think the Republicans in particular, the House and the changes they made in the House side when the Senate bill was sent over, I think you showed a lot of goodwill there on their part, and the governor, I think, had a lot to do with that, plus she reciprocated.
And I agree in the sense that Whitmer had to have a deal, though, with Gilbert, because now would be the time when she has the most leverage. For every day that expires and Gilbert goes out there with the signatures, for every signature he collects, she has a little less leverage and a little less reason for the Republicans to negotiate, because it's closer to the point where Republicans say, yeah, that's okay, we'll go with this instead. Agreed, Mike?
Yeah. Remember that if Gilbert does a ballot initiative, it goes to the legislature and Whitmer doesn't even get a crack at
right,
it.
Exactly.
So there is that leverage. But keep in mind also that this is a much better bill than what we saw last year. It's a much better bill than was originally put on the table. The Democrats managed to get non-driving factors in there. They don't like exactly the way it works, but it's in there. They got mandatory rate rollbacks. they see loopholes there, and they are there, but it's in the bill. So it got a lot of improvements, and a lot of it was because the Democrats just kept pushing and pushing.
And remember this too, Kyle. Yes, there's the thing with Gilbert, and maybe she was thinking far enough. She was thinking far enough ahead to say, hey, now's the better time to do it. Why wait till later? But that would make her in Michigan an exception to what's happening in the rest of the country. I don't know if there's been this kind of bipartisan win in any of the other 49 states, certainly not at the national level in quite a while.
Jacob, some of your other thoughts on this. I was looking for where this has been uttered before, but there seems to be the sentiment that if you make everyone angry, that you came out with a good compromise. And I'm about to start on a story looking at all the interest groups that are not happy with this bill. The Insurance Alliance, the hospitals, the Association of Justice, so the trial lawyers, and CPAN, most of all, with some very colorful language. So on the flip side, you have almost every legislator with a press release saying, I saved you some money on your auto insurance.
And so if everybody's angry, I guess nobody can declare victory, and maybe this really was a true compromise.
The big pressure, which the insurance industry hinted to, is if there is somehow sentiment or reality or perception of reality that rates don't go down by X date, that's going to come back on the lawmakers.
Yeah, how soon do we got to see real rate rollback, Jack, before people declare this either a failure or a success?
Well, for anybody who's renewing, that's going to be the first thing. And as we know, this isn't going to happen that quickly. So it's got to play out, and it's got to be real, and it's got to be there, I would say, over the course of the next year or so.
One of the things that you have to keep in mind is one of the big losers in this are the hospitals. They have been able to charge what they want to car accident victims, and now they're on a fee schedule. And I think that's very significant savings in the system.
And it makes you wonder if that means that they're going to negotiate other rates with other insurers, with Medicaid, or whatever they can do to try and mitigate the losses they're going to take here on car insurance, because they've been using car insurance to help stabilize their finances for a long time. They're not going to get a chance to do that anymore. You hear of hospitals being on the brink, that there's always financial challenges. What does this do to them now that they're not going to be able to charge whatever they want on car wreck victims?
One of the things I learned on this during this debate this time, and obviously I've been around and I've covered this before, but it kind of came out the fact that the insurance companies keep saying here are these higher rates that the hospitals can charge anything they want. And the reality is in a lot of those cases, the insurance companies challenge them and yet they get a negotiated price.
Okay.
So those rates that have always been talked about, and yes, they are, they're very ugly to look at when you hear them. The story hasn't really been told about what really happens a lot of times.
All right, well, let's listen to House Speaker Lee Chatfield and Mike Shirky do their victory lap and their scrum with reporters immediately after the vote. All right, so how'd this come together, Senator?
Patience, commitment, will, and trust. Take it to the bank.
How'd you gain all that in this last couple of weeks?
Talking. You know, the root of the word politics is many people talking. That is what we're supposed to do in government. Politics, many people talking. And that's precisely what we did the last couple weeks.
Did you ever think it was going to fall apart?
Mike's law of complex problems and complex deals is that every complex deal faces three, at least, near-death experiences. And we had our near-death experiences. But I had no question that it was going to come together.
What does this do going forward for cooperation? I'd ask you both this. For cooperation between you, your minority leaders, and your respective chambers, and with the governor, because this is the first in this legislative session that we've seen this kind of overall cooperation on a big issue.
Well, I think there's many big issues that we need to tackle as a state. And in divided government, you need to find consensus. But in order to find consensus, you need to have an element of trust. And what we built here was a foundation that we can build on in the future and tackle the other issues that are facing our state.
Are you making commitments to the governor on revenue for roads?
I think since about January 3rd, we made it abundantly clear that Auto No Fault was going to stand alone on its own merit.
And I'm going to say what we've been saying all term, whether in the House or the Senate. We want to ensure that we do have a roads plan that funds our roads, because I think the people of the state have made it very clear they want the roads fixed. And we're going to focus on that along with every other issue that's facing our state. But it's not tied to car insurance.
I want you to imagine for a moment the same kind of energy that we've applied in both chambers for the last 5 months on insurance reform, now turning and being focused on roads. That's the only picture I got to paint for you.
When are we going to see it?
When it's ready.
Guys, we just saw that the hospitals, the trial attorneys, and the insurance companies all come out with statements. They all have concerns about Senate Bill 1. I want to get your reaction to that.
Well, I think this issue has eluded both chambers from having real reform and giving it to the governor for the past 30 years. And if the people of our state are going to see the cost savings that we just guaranteed, there are many stakeholders and lobbyists that are going to have to take a haircut, and that's what we did. But because of that, the people of our state have real rate relief, and that's what they've been demanding from us for the last 30 years.
I'm not suggesting for a moment that the bill is perfect, but if CPAN and those representing CPAN and the insurers and those representing insurers and the hospitals and those representing the hospitals all are concerned about the bill, I think we hit a sweet spot.
The governor said just 1 week ago she would draw the line on a full opt-out for personal injury protection. This effectively includes a full opt-out guaranteeing 100% PIP reduction for folks with health insurance. What changed over the last
year? I don't think this is about the governor or the speaker or the Senate Majority Leader. It's about the drivers across the state of Michigan that need real rate relief. So very happy of the partnership with this governor and her determination to get this done with us. And because of that partnership, we got it done.
How much do you think this had to do with Gilbert putting the squeeze on Whitmer?
I think victory has 1,000 fathers, but I will tell you this, day one of this legislature, the House and Senate determined that this was our number one priority, so I'm very happy to have delivered on it today in a deal with this governor.
Some of your colleagues said that they considered this a first step towards better auto insurance. If there's any issues that present themselves, are you willing to take this back to the floor?
So I'd like to answer that differently. With the way the current laws are for auto no fault, there's no way to go in and tweak it the way it's written. This now allows us to do those kinds of things into the future, and I expect great innovations from future legislatures to that end.
What do you think this will mean for litigation moving forward? Of course, no fault promised to reduce litigation but didn't necessarily do that. How does this change that equation?
Well, I think there's now stability in our system, but to answer that question, I think only time will tell.
Why did you do these retroactive fee schedules for people who already got claims, some of them are years old?
To ensure that we accelerated the savings as fast as possible. We made sure that there are no services interrupted, but the reimbursements for those services after full enactment will be adjusted to the new fee schedules, and allow those services to continue to be delivered. Quite frankly, the money will last longer under the new fee schedule.
I think for the first time with our car insurance system, we actually have some cost containment. And because of that, people are going to see real savings.
As far as the negotiations with Whitmer, how would you say that whole process went? Was frustrating or just a longer process? How would you explain how that went?
I think it was a very productive process. And what the Senate and the House, in partnership with this governor, accomplished in the first 5 months of this term is incredible, and we did something that has eluded both chambers in the last 40 years. So very proud of the partnership and proud of the work that we did.
Thank you.
Now we're going to listen to what the Senate Minority Leader Jim Ananick had to say about the proposal. All right, let's get your reaction, Senator.
You know, I think it's the process developed was a lot of compromise, a lot of folks coming together, a lot of input from obviously the Democratic caucuses in both chamber and the governor. As Senator Bullock said, it's not a perfect process, but we've moved the ball down the field in a real important way where we give people real rate relief and we protect the coverage model that we have in the state, and I think that's really important.
Governor said 1 week ago she drew the line at full opt-out. This essentially provides a full opt-out for people with health insurance. Did she cave?
No, I think she compromised on something to make sure there was protections to people that have to coordinate their benefits and make sure that we're sort of in line with where almost every other state in the country is. There's protections for both the insurance, the person's personal insurance, but also the auto, I think. I think there was a lot of compromises in this bill, and I think we reached a good deal.
Senator, does this indicate that there may be more ground for compromise on other important issues going forward? Did this set a tone that we hadn't seen so far in this legislative session?
I couldn't have said that better myself. I think the beginning 5 months, we had a lot of getting to know each other and building trust. I think the last month, the quadrant leader and the governor, we had a lot of productive conversations, and I think this is a roadmap of how to go forward. Obviously, you know, starting off the process in a collaborative way is a better way to do it, but the end, I think, worked out in a positive way. We're going to have to come back and look at this issue. This law has been in effect for 40 years. We've got commitments from all parties that if we need to come back and make adjustments, we'll do that. That's why we have a little bit of a guidepost before some of these things go in place.
Senator, are you satisfied with the role Senate Democrats played in this compromise?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's about getting the best product, right? I don't have an ego here. We met with the governor. We met with the quadrant leaders. I talked to Senator Shirky on a regular basis. You know, I think we reached a good product with a lot of input from my colleagues, both from Detroit and outside. I feel like the product was a good compromise.
What one thing can you say is your stamp that you said, this is because Senate Dems or legislative Dems were involved that this is in this bill?
No, I think for sure the non-driving factors were something that obviously all Democrats, but something that my colleagues in particular, along with the House Democrats, we made a very strong position on that. And also we wanted to make sure, as you know, I said sitting here that guaranteed rate rollbacks was an important component. I think both those factors were, you know, influenced by
but
Senate Democrats.
That didn't really, the rate rollback didn't change at all from the House plan, really, did it?
No, it's slightly different, but I mean, I think the concept of getting a rate rollback, obviously, the Senate bill we didn't vote for. We asked for some changes in the House bill that came over. Some of those changes were there. There's even more now. It's a compromise, it's a give and take process, and I think overall we reached to a place where we found common ground.
Do you think this will actually do anything to stop redlining if insurers can still base rates on territories such as small as a census tract?
I think that the fact that we've given more powers to DIFs to make sure that there's rational reasons and that they have to, you know, we have the adjusted the file and use process to a more stringent approach. I think there will be natural pressure to make sure that rates are rate based on person's driving record, and I think that's an important step, something we haven't had in a long time here.
The trial attorneys aren't going to like this bill, and so will probably some of the providers. What's your response to that? They've been natural allies to the Democrats for a long time.
No question about it, and I think we there were some protections in there of some, you know, over 40 years with lawsuits and other things. The initial intent of the no-fault law has changed through precedent and things of that nature. There were some things in there to address McCormick. There's some things in there to address residual bodily injury, so that if, you know, as we move to a different system, we have more protections for people. I said from the beginning, if any one party is popping a champagne cork, we did it wrong. Everybody feels the pinch on this bill, and I think that's an important thing to make sure that ratepayers are the ones getting the benefit.
Okay, one more question.
It's not really no fault anymore. What should we call this system? No fault light?
As long as it's not my fault, that's all I care.
And earlier we were able to talk with Representative Isaac Robinson. He was one of the 15 no votes on the House floor and spoke on the floor about his problems with the bill. Let's go ahead and talk with Isaac. Thanks for joining us on the podcast, Isaac.
Thank you, brother.
So what was the problem with what happened in the legislature on Friday in regards to this no fault bill?
Well, Detroiters and state reps who represent urban areas, this is a number one issue for us because of the excessive rates. I have residents who get repoed for car insurance, not because they don't make payments, $9,000 or $10,000 rates. And this current bill I oppose because it does nothing to address territorial rating or credit information. It has very weak language. They ban postal codes, but that doesn't ban all other ways to punish people for where they live. You can do it based on census tract, precincts, create quadrants. Banning a credit score doesn't ban you from going into the credit report to use the information in the report. It just bans the use of the number, the credit score.
You're sounding very cynical on this, though,
yeah,
because what you wanted is kind of in there on this.
The language is in there full of loopholes to allow the insurance companies to do whatever they want. If they show a rational connection for risk to that factor, they'll still be able to do it. So they have a number of non-driving factors that are banned, but really they're not banned. Just like the current law says, excessive rates aren't allowed. Under our law, there can never be an excessive rate as long as there's competition, and that's according to the law. So Detroiters are being sold out, and the car insurance company was supposed to get a haircut. And everybody's supposed to get a haircut, but this bill has been massaged to make sure all the special corporate interests are held harmless and they're taken care of. But the people that elected Governor Whitmer have been shut out, And when people are paying $9,000 and $10,000 rates, there's inequality in the system. And we've done nothing but give people options to cut their health care.
Do you think that this is going to lower auto insurance rates for Detroit residents?
I think it may make Governor Whitmer a one-term governor because the people of Detroit trust her, and we've been sold out. And a deal has been signed off that does nothing to address territorial and credit rating, which are a big cause of why we pay so much.
Am I hearing this right, that while it may cut auto insurance somewhat, Detroit is still going to be out on its island with paying more than everybody else?
Well, I'm from the school, you expand health care, and their whole bill focuses around the idea of weakening and undermining Michigan's number one health care insurance in America, the unlimited, where people who have catastrophic injuries are protected. And so, yes, there are some guaranteed rate reductions, I guess. You know, I have to look at the details and the tricky language by the insurance companies, but it revolves around the car insurance companies not having to provide health care coverage. So they're you know, but it doesn't mean the profits that they're going to be making, they're going to, you know, it's not going to be a fair formula. In California, they cap profits. In Ohio, they cap profits. That's why in Ohio, rates are a lot lower than ours, because they're actually attacking the insurance companies, not health care.
And so that's what you would have wanted to see in this bill, was some kind of profit cap so that you are assured that insurance companies aren't raking your residents.
Yeah, that would make sense. I mean, they've gotten over and abused us for so long. But that would be, you know, we're playing defense to this choice bill that Dan Gilbert and Mike Duggan support. Maybe it's the only way to get something through this Republican legislature, and and hopefully there's some good in it. But it's terrible because it really doesn't address the issue of equality and the need to address the disparity between Rep. LaFave and Upper Peninsula. His residents are complaining about paying $1,500 a year because they pay $600 over in Wisconsin. But we're here paying $9,000 and $10,000 a year.
$9,000 to $10,000. I thought it was $5,000 or $6,000.
That's the average, right? So on average, Detroiters pay $5,000. We get quotes regularly for $10,000. It's terrible. And so that's where when someone's being charged $10,000, you have to do an actuarial analysis to see if that's excessive. Under the current law, no rate could ever be excessive. And we didn't even address that issue to give DIFs more authority, so that when someone is clearly being abused, that they could get some relief and have that rate disapproved.
Because you've said all along that the Department of Insurance and Financial Affairs or Services, otherwise known as DIFs, is a toothless tiger.
Right, and I said toothless dog, but toothless tiger is a fair analogy. But they admit it. This is in the analysis. They admit they have no teeth. They say that they can't prohibit excessive rates. And they have one actuary, or maybe a part-time actuary. I've heard they either have one or a part-time. And so in the state with the most expensive rates, 6 years in a row, we don't have any actuaries doing an evaluation to see if the insurance companies are doing something wrong. But the laws allow them to do whatever they want. So I guess it doesn't matter.
And you were pushing for 14 actuaries, one for each congressional district.
Yeah, that was just a number I came up with. I mean, as the ball is moving fast, we might need more, you know, and maybe you need more in areas where there's more complaints. So, you know, you might have an area where rates are more reasonable than an urban area where there's more redlining.
So if this bill would have allowed DIFs to have more regulatory power, hired more actuaries, and had insurance companies capped at how much profit they could make, would you have been a yes vote?
I would have been closer to being a yes vote. The line in the sand for many of us historically, and I talked to Steve Tobachman, who's advising me on Facebook, who was the, I think, the number two Democrat under Dillon. Mm-hmm. He said you can't have a deal where you don't do something on territory or credit rating information, because that's where the heart of the matter is that really explains the excessive out-of-control rates.
For Detroit, anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. And
Hamtramck. And Hamtramck. I represent Hamtramck, who is in the same zip code.
This looks like a done deal. What's the next steps as far as doing something on insurance, as far as you're concerned?
Well, we're having a rally on Tuesday at 8 in the morning at 51 West Hancock at a nonprofit, Arc Detroit, building where you have persons with disabilities. And we're going to be talking about how this has, what impact this has on our health care. We have to examine the bill. There's more loopholes to be found, more flaws. because car insurance companies make a lot of money, and they do this in 50 states. So they have all types of template language to protect their profits. And so we're going to be calling on the governor to veto this if that's what the situation is, if no amendments get through.
Anything else you want to say on this one, Isaac?
Oh, I'm still optimistic that the governor will do something around territorial and credit rating. She seems like a very sincere, good person. The people that were at the table didn't know what they were doing, or they didn't have a commitment to put the right language in. But if you had state reps like Donna Lisinski, Rep Hamoud, Sherry Gay-Donago, Kyra Bolden, these were our heavy hitters. The people who sat on committees and learned the information, they should have been able to review the document before the deal. Totally disrespectful to this branch of government. Totally disrespectful to the Democratic caucus. We're very disrespected. We're actually nothing. We're nobodies, obviously, in this discussion.
Because you guys didn't have anybody at the table when this was cut.
We had a staff member, and Christine Gregg, I believe, is part of this thing called a quadrant, which I have no idea what that is. I know the people of Detroit elected Governor Whitmer, so that's where the power is, and she will be held accountable for this deal.
Isaac Robinson, State Representative out of the City of Detroit, thanks for being on the podcast.
All right, thank you.
And that's going to do it for this week's edition of Murs Monday. Thanks to the crew here. Nice work today by Jack and Mike and Jacob. And thank you all for listening. Thank you to AT&T for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.